we need to try to understand what the audiences felt. But if we just did a literal recreation, a documentary style recreation, it wouldn't work for today's audiences. Well, the same thing applies to Napoleon, right? Like you can't actually show it. I'm not asking you to show it exactly in documentary fashion the way it happened, but you need to give us some
feeling.
Yeah, and yeah. I just never had the feeling. Welcome to the QR Lab. This is where we are on a quest. Q.
And R.
Questioning, right? And R for reality. Quest to understand reality on a constant questioning of reality. My name's Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm here with my main man.
Amr Zeki, how you doing, bro?
How you doing today, man?
Wonderfulous.
Wonderfulous?
Wonderfulous.
So that's something I haven't heard before. So today we are kind of interested in discussing, well, let's put it this way. I just saw this film, Napoleon, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Joaquin Phoenix. And on this podcast, we've discussed Joaquin Phoenix, and I think we've discussed Ridley Scott, two of our favorites, coming together to make a film. Had very high expectations, walked out feeling rather underwhelmed. I saw it with my son, Kabir, and my youngest one as well. I think we were sort of underwhelmed. It's a 2-hour, 40-minute movie. Now, I am somebody who loves biographies. I mean, I'm a sucker for them in a way. I'm very curious when they're done right. For example, I think Oppenheimer was done remarkably well. I read the book, American Prometheus, and I think that source material lent for the creation of a very unique and, incredible film. It was based on great material and had its own take on the material. Napoleon is a little different, right? And Napoleon's about a 200-year-old character. He's also kind of controversial. He's also foreign. I think, obviously, the director is not French. But that does European, I guess, you know, but certainly they have their own takes on Napoleon. The other thing is that Napoleon is a very well written about character.
I mean, massive numbers of books.
Right? I mean, I think there's thousands of books.
I don't know if it's thousands, but a lot of people have studied his writings and his, you know, the not messages, but, you know,
his war strategies are studied at West Point. They were actually employed during the Civil War. Yeah. You know, he was a revolutionary military general and battlefield commander.
Right.
He also was somebody who immersed himself directly into the battle, especially early on. I think that inspired his men, and that's how he actually managed to become very endearing to them, and they followed him.
He jumped into the campaigns. Fray. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the movie does show that. You know, certainly does show that. I think what it falls apart for me is on this very in-depth look at his psychological relationship with his love. Big yawn. Okay.
Really? So what happened?
Just that boring.
No. Just tell me what happened. Just, why?
It's
why?
Funny. Like when anybody, like somebody could be tired, just a genuine yawn. You know, I'm very interested. You know what I mean? Like
it's a biological response, but. Tell me why this thing fell apart.
Actually, you're trying to be awake. You're trying to awaken yourself by taking in deep breaths to open up your air sacs, right? To get more
that
oxygen.
That is correct.
Right? But, I mean, I'm talking to the pulmonary guru here, tell me.
So tell me why. So was it a love story? I mean, that's what this biography was about?
No. I mean, you know, any biography will have, you know, maybe some romantic elements to it or trying to understand the protagonist's love affair or his relationships and his life. I mean, so that's not the issue. The issue is that the movie really singularly focuses on it. It makes it a center point, and it makes it the vehicle through which we're supposed to understand Napoleon. Like, we are going to understand everything about the man through this. It's a Ridley Scott has said this is a character study. He's not interested in discussing his accomplishments, his achievements, or any of that.
It's a tunnel vision view, it seems like.
Well, it's taking the approach from I just want to understand this person. But, you know, my son made a very good analogy. He said it would be like making a biography of Steph Curry and never show him shooting a three-pointer.
That's ridiculous.
That right. would be ridiculous. But, right. I mean, that's a little bit extreme to say that. But the reason I say that is because, for example, the way the military conquests are conducted in this film, there's no context. As they appear, you don't really know where we're at. What are we fighting? It might be one word on the screen that kind of says, oh, okay, it's this. But you don't have a sense of why these things are happening. You don't have a sense of, you know, Napoleon was not a chump. I mean, basically, he fought all of Europe and won. I mean, he, you know, for example, in the film, they go to Egypt, okay? But they don't even discuss the fact that, you know, he discovered the Rosetta Stone. I mean, they discovered the Rosetta Stone when they went there. I mean, there's like, there were some things that Napoleon was involved in and around that should have been shown in this film.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're not going to show that, at least describe to us why we are even here talking about him.
Right.
I think the film exists on sort of a meta level. Like it doesn't bother to take the time to explain to you. It sort of assumes that you know, okay, you know the history. Ridley Scott doesn't seem to care at all. The script doesn't seem to care at all about the history.
Who wrote it? Who wrote the screenplay?
It's a guy named, I believe his name is David Scarpa.
Known or?
I mean, he's done stuff. I mean, he's not unknown, but I mean, his approach here was more a character study of Napoleon and his personal life and his relationship with Josephine specifically, and then the investigation into, you know, the circumstances of that relationship, I guess, you know.
So it was really a lens. They're looking through that relationship, aspects of his life, but there's no really other context. This extremely, it sounds like very focused from a certain perspective, really.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it is definitely from a perspective that this person was really wired through this relationship with Josephine. I mean, for example, when he leaves Egypt, the film suggests that he leaves Egypt for Josephine. There's another circumstance where he leaves and it's because of Josephine. And historically, that doesn't seem very accurate. At least that's not the suggestions amongst the history. But and I don't mind when you contort history a little bit, you know, as long as you get it
artistic
right.
Artistic freedom is often
but
taken.
But you got to get it right. You got to get it right. And so the film just sort of assumes that you know all of the great things about Napoleon, but we're not going to show it to you.
Actually, the movie Lincoln did a great job of balancing those things because it showed his wife, the relationship with his children, the other politicians. It was central on Lincoln, but he had these you know, tributaries to all these other characters. But you know, it was, you know, wartime. It sounds like I intend on seeing the movie.
I would definitely see it. Yeah. I know that Apple TV is going to release it.
Yeah.
And I would recommend watching it. And I will watch it again as long as it's a long. I think they said there's going to release a longer version. You might be like, you didn't like the movie. Why do you want to see the longer version? It's because I'm hoping that in the longer version, they actually put in some more explanation of the character.
Can I ask you a question, though? How was.
I'm sorry, not just the explanation of the character. I what I mean is, give me some reason to be here in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, not everybody is a military or a history expert. Like, for example, I went back and watched some, you know, some videos and I did some, you know, reading to really see, like, who was Napoleon. And it actually intrigued me enough to say, who is this guy? Just the same way when Oppenheimer came out, I really wanted to read America. I think it's really interesting and fascinating to know both. Like, what is somebody trying to tell you here? Because in a film, when you're telling a biographical story, you can use this canvas of film. Right, you don't have to write out. Oh, then he did this, and then he went here for his studies, and then he did this, and then he did. You can show us in a way, that
like in Oppenheimer, the beautiful scene where he's being interrogated. You know, with those guys in that small room, and then the walls start shaking, and there's all this white light, which is showing the sort of the stress or the intensity he's feeling. You know, it's like the beautiful, utterly brilliant visuals that Christopher Nolan brought to. Which I was going to ask you about the artistic side, which is I consider Joaquin Phoenix as a modern day one of the great actors. How was his portrayal? Just as, you know, was he as great in this role as he was in The Joker?
He was flat. He was flat, and I feel that it did not capture. I could not believe that this person, the way Joaquin Phoenix played it, could have achieved what he achieved. In a way, they're telling some other version of history. They're giving you some other picture of who this guy was. And it is not well put together. There's no, when you jump from scene to scene, from moment to, I feel like, you know, we're here and then all of a sudden we're getting, we're at his coronation. It's like, what? Like, you're not going to go through the Napoleonic, do you know that he created the Napoleonic Code, which is still, you know, in use today. Not discussed in the film at all. Mm. The Napoleonic Wars, completely skipped. Don't even go over it. They go through a little bit about his relationship with Prussia and the czars and in Russia.
Yeah,
you know, and also Austria. But any good biography has to be also balanced by its supporting characters. That's something that Oppenheimer does very well.
Exactly.
It's something that great biographies do.
And it wasn't in this movie. So I was going to ask you about this thing.
Should be called Josephine and Napoleon.
Oh, goodness. Okay. This is actually a great segue because I was going to ask you, right? You're a filmmaker, right? You know how to tell stories. I was going to ask you, what then are the elements, which is really the point of this podcast, what are the elements of a solid, well-conceived, attractive, worth your time biography, be it a book or especially a film? Now, you're the perfect person, right, to address this because you love biographies, you've made movies. So how would you make a Napoleon film? What are the elements?
So Stanley Kubrick approached this, right, and was going to make this movie with Jack Nicholson. And it never ended up working out. In fact, a lot of his research ended up going to making a film called Barry Lyndon. So I think, though, what Kubrick was, how he approached it was understanding historically the time period, really understanding that time period. What were they, what kind of military operations were they using? What was the standards of practice? Why was Napoleon so revolutionary in terms of
how his tactics?
There's something really big here that's being omitted. The film kind of shows it. It starts off with the revolution happening and a young man, Napoleon, seeing this happening. It finds a lot of distaste in it, but yet it is an opportunity for him to rise. In that period in France, only the nobility would be able to become generals, right? This is an opportunity for people because France has a revolution. It overthrows its monarchy. Marie Antoinette's head is in a basket, okay? That's how the film starts. So, I mean, they definitely characterize it. It's very nicely done. Now, he moves on. So there's something there that's really fascinating. And they should be discussing in the film how the rest of Europe is terrified by France's revolution.
And other monarchies
are. Other monarchies are very threatened by this.
Right, everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very threatened by this. And it's one of the reasons why.
And it happened in Russia too, right?
Correct. Yeah. And it's one of the reasons why they are very concerned about the rise of this general who seems to be just comes along at, think about these circumstances. Think about why we even talk about Napoleon. And there is a reason. He was a massive propagandist himself. He knew how to use propaganda. He was returning from his Egyptian campaigns, which were actually kind of a loss for him. But instead, he wrote about them and sent out propaganda saying how great they were and came back celebrated as a
hero.
He
used the media.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, these people were so far ahead of their time. I mean, Napoleon was so far ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And the thing is that there were a lot of accessory people in his life, a lot of supporting characters, if you will, that are just kind of omitted in the film.
So getting back to the question I asked you.
Okay.
How would you now, Ridley Scott, the producers come to you, they say, listen, we want you to write the screenplay and to direct, Christopher Nolan-esque, you get to do both, come back to us in a year with a full screenplay and a plan on which actors, how do you want to do this? So now you have the platform or the opportunity to actually make a biography? What are the elements that you think are important?
So absolutely, I started off by saying like how Kubrick started with capturing the exact essence of the time.
Great point.
So that was where I was going.
The context, the historical context of that character.
Right. And the fact that Ridley started off doing that, but he completely gets derailed as he goes on. Or at least the screenplay is completely derailed on it. So number one, really immerse. Look, if you're not going to be accurate to all of the historical, the plot line development, you know how it's not convenient to tell somebody's life story like linearly, and it would be boring, right? Then he went here, and then he went there, and then he did this, and oh, this great thing happened. Obviously, when people are storytellers and they're telling stories, they put things together. Like, for example, in Malcolm X had a lot of secondary characters, a lot of friends that he worked with. But in the film, they made one character who sort of embodied all of those characters, right? So he becomes the one. So we don't have to get used to 10 different supporting characters. We just need one. And then that one becomes
embodies the other guys.
But it's so important to do that. That mechanism in film is so critical because it allows the audience some stability in terms of trying to understand who we're here to actually watch.
It's actually the lens through the supporting character. You're actually seeing the main character. So your second element is, you know, your first element is a context, historical context. The second element is the supporting cast.
You don't need to be true to every single detail of every single campaign. You know, you can embellish on that. That's fine. But at least be true to the actual time period. Like, don't be anachronistic. Don't be lazy. Don't be sloppy. So that's number one. Number two, number two is this. You must pick the right actor to do Napoleon, or the right actor. You have to pick the right actor. Malcolm X, Denzel Washington, perfect choice, right? Oppenheimer, Cillian Murphy, nailed it.
Right. Yeah.
So that is critical. This is an example of a very poor choice, and I think actually picking Nicholson would have been an even worse choice.
Who do you think would it be? Modern day actor?
I think it's hard, but think about Napoleon, right? Like, he died at 51. He was basically out of commission.
What did he die of? Just
he died of stomach cancer, apparently. Okay. So you know the story, right?
He was exiled to the island.
Exiled to an island, but just right off the coast there. So he easily came back and Battle of Waterloo. He lost again. And then they threw him in St. Helena, which is way out in the boondocks. And so there, he ends up dying of stomach cancer. Some people suspect that he may have died of arsenic, but at that
poisoning,
time...
Poisoning, yeah, I remember.
At that time, a lot of people had arsenic in their blood. I mean, the arsenic was, so it doesn't necessarily...
He actually had a lot of visitors on the island as well, people who came to visit
him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it possible he was poisoned, maybe? But the bottom line is, it should be somebody who captures the youth.
So which actor?
When he goes and does some of his initial
Pacino
campaigns,
when he was younger.
Yeah, yes.
Pacino, right?
But I don't know, you know, and this is another thing about, maybe, you know why?
When he was younger.
You know why? Yeah. Napoleon was not French. He was Italian.
He was Italian, right?
Right, he's from Corsica, right? Corsica was taken by, but his family, his mother
his
and father.
His ethnic lineage is Italian.
Is actually Italian, right. And actually he spoke in this Corsican accent and was actually bullied and
They made fun of him
because he had a different accent. He wasn't like really...
He's not 100% French.
So think about that, right? I mean, there's kind of a lot there.
Pacino would be able to play him when he was younger.
I think a young Pacino could... I do, actually.
God, that's so good.
But I'm talking a Pacino of... Like
the first Scarface.
Pre-Scarface.
Right, exactly.
The Godfather Pacino.
I'm glad we see eye to eye on this.
Yeah, and it should be somebody who's not... Like, honestly, when Pacino dropped The Godfather... Nobody knew him.
Right.
He was
Nobody
a brand
knew.
New actor.
Right.
That's who you need.
Right.
You need a diamond in the rough. I think a good casting choice was, for example, in the Baz Luhrmann's version of Elvis, he cast Austin Butler.
Amazing.
Austin Butler he's not super well recognized, right. But Elvis is. So when you put the actor in, you immediately believe it's...
You know, that's a brilliant
point.
You
see what I'm saying?
Absolutely genius point, because... You don't want a well-known actor because he comes with baggage.
You already have some preconceived notions about
him. So you need somebody
Another great example was Lawrence of Arabia, Peter O'Toole, brand new actor.
Amazing.
And he crushed that. And also, those actors are willing to take a few more risks.
So true.
I don't think I don't know what Joaquin Phoenix was doing in this film. Is he a bad actor? No. Was his performance horrible? It wasn't horrible, but it just...
Flat, like you said.
It was flat to really speaking who Napoleon was. I mean,
yeah. He had a kind of youthful vigor. I mean, like you said, he's dead at eight, you know, dead at age 51, right?
Let me give you an example. During some of the battle sequences, there are shots of Joaquin Phoenix, like early on in the film, you know, during the battles, he looks nervous. He's turning, he's looking around, like he's doing some of this, right? And when later on in the film, he has a lot more confidence. But at one point in the film, like during a battle sequence, he closes his eyes and looks like he's like in like taking a nap. He's like, it looks like he's falling asleep. You say, oh, no, he's in deep contemplation. He's a genius strategizer. Okay, but that's an example of how you didn't filmically capture the essence of that. I'll give you an example. Elvis, right, did not actually occur the way Baz Luhrmann shot it. He overhyped it for today's audiences to understand the excitement that people...
I think that film was brilliant. Elvis's film.
I'm glad you agree, because I agree.
I seen it twice, and I'm...
It's this point I'm making, I think. You tell me if you think I'm wrong, but that sometimes you have to show people things. So in the context of 2023, we need to try to understand what the audiences felt. But if we just did a literal recreation, a documentary-style recreation it wouldn't work for today's audiences. Well, the same thing applies to Napoleon, right? Like, you can't actually show it. I'm not asking you to show it exactly in documentary fashion the way it happened, but you need to give us some...
The feeling.
Yeah, and I just never had the feeling of this man who is known for doing these, these accomplishments as, you know... If you want to call him a butcher, I'll be the first to agree. It does not underplay the fact that he was a military genius and strategist.
It doesn't diminish that.
Doesn't diminish the accomplishments of being able to basically stave off seven different European states, right? And it
he turned the world upside down in Europe.
Right. I mean, one of his strategies was the fact that he could move so fast. I think one of his quotes was, "I conquered this country just by marching."
Also, by deception. He had much smaller, many battles. He had much smaller forces. He would split them into five.
Split them up, right.
And the enemy would think they were surrounded by hundreds of thousands, and that wasn't true. I mean, a lot of great generals in history have used tactics. Hannibal, Khalid bin Walid, in the Islamic openings. Many, many great Alexander have used deception to make the other, the opposing side, think that their military is much fiercer, much larger. Again, it's an intelligence operation. And from what I've read about Napoleon, he had that down. And in fact, I remember there was in one book I was reading where he would, before some of his operations, he was very much detail-oriented about the intelligence reports, and he would spend days locked up in a room. They said the entire office of his was scattered with reports and maps taped on the walls, on the ceiling, on the floor. He would be sitting in the middle of it, walking around, no interruptions, considering all the intelligence reports, and then he'd come out with a decision as to what to do. He really was...
He knew,
master strategist.
He knew all of the supplies. He knew all of the ranks, the organization. Right. He knew his generals.
The weather, the climate, everything.
Yes. He knew all of the details. He thought everything through. Yes.
Right.
Very well said.
Yeah.
He knew all of that. And he would spend all of his effort. And he was constantly involved in
the nitty-gritty.
But also writing, constantly writing letters back forth and, getting funds and moving funds around. And I love this thing.
I know, it's beautiful.
A little sword fight. Yeah,
it's a little pointer.
For those listening, we have these pointers.
Extendable.
Anyway, not very useful. Anyway, the point is, they completely botched that.
Yeah, so
you never get this sense of the man, his level of preparation. They make it look, I feel like sometimes they make it look, it was just like effortless.
So answer me the question, because we're still back to the same question. What other elements? Again, you're the filmmaker.
So we said, getting the proper details of the history, and not that doesn't mean just the story narrative, but just the capturing.
Basically, the right actor.
The right actor, and then, I think then it really does come down to making sure you get,
You said it. The context, like in the Elvis movie, right?
Yes.
You have to create the visual, emotional, auditory. Like when he was dancing on stage, what it did to those teenage girls. You know, he wanted to make you feel like you're in the audience.
Right.
Right. You really had that feeling like I was there. Right. His first outdoor concert, when people like swarmed the stage and people are like falling and crashing and the police are trying to get.
Right.
You really felt like you were there. I think that's the third element.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that element.
Vicarious filmmaking.
And then I think you need to have a nice balance of showing, obviously, the person's personal life. But if you took any one of us, right, and showed just kind of the bad events that happened in our lives, you know, like, for example, in the film, they focus on just Fiend's infidelity, kind of their strange kind of back and forth relationship. You don't really get a sense for why he's so captivated by her, even.
What about the movie by...
Not to say that her acting was bad. She was, Vanessa Kirby in the film was outstanding, and she was charming, and she was probably one of the best elements of the film, actually.
Marlon Brando played Napoleon.
Yes, that's right. I haven't seen the film, but I've
seen excerpts of it. It's worth going back to study that film, because we said which actor would play. I think Marlon Brando may have pulled it off from what I've seen.
I would have to go back and look. There's also a film that was done by a Russian guy who, very interesting, in 1970 made a film called Waterloo. And that movie really focuses a lot on, like, they had, like, I don't know how many tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers on the battlefield. I mean, like,
it was not
CGI at all. It was like 50 years ago. So, I mean, they did everything
wrong. Have you seen that?
So I've seen, you know, like a YouTube short on it that, not even a short, I've seen like a whole YouTube episode that kind of reviews the film. I'd love to go back and watch the whole film though.
Yeah.
So again, capturing somebody's life, how do you do this?
Right.
How do you really do it? And I love what you were saying about, pointing out about Nolan and Oppenheimer, you know, visually, cinematically, there's so much room to express what
With visual experience.
Right. You can tell so much about what this character's feeling. And I think a good biography does that. It does it cinematically.
So beautiful.
It doesn't have to do it through the narrative. So in other words, Scott's really great at giving us the spectacles. He's cinematic.
Gladiator, right?
But that's actually
that is a great movie. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay, but again, if it's not it's fiction, right? It's not based on anything, so there's nothing at stake there, really. It's just a great film. I think if this were a complete, call it something else, and it could have been a really good movie. The only problem is it's really based on, you know, a lot of
Isabella, mostly with a little bit of Napoleon on the side.
Josephine.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that there could have been. There's an opportunity to create a lot in terms of a biography. You can really get the narrative, you know, telling the story of this person. He grew up here. This is where he was. This is what it was like. Oppenheimer, again, is like a great example of a biography.
Such a great film.
They don't go into his childhood, but they show some of the agitation and consternation of this great mind as he's in a young place and how he makes errors when he's young. So we kind of get this feeling of him, right? And I think it beautifully moves along. I'm not quite sure why, to be honest, I'm not quite sure why it gets derailed, other than the reasons I've given you, and that might just be my feeling about it. I think if other people really, really like the film, I'd be intrigued to know what it was they liked. I've read reviews of the people who liked it, and most of what they say is that, you know, it's spectacle, it's big, it's fun.
Well, what did you think of Lincoln?
Yeah, I mean... Again, I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I remember being just blown away by Daniel Day-Lewis's performance.
It's epic.
But it's mimicry in a way, but it's also he captured...
He speaks with a high-pitched voice. I am clothed with supreme power. You know, he says, I'm clothed with so much power. You know, he actually read reports of, like, descriptions of his voice. You know, he had a high-pitched voice. And the method acting of Daniel Day-Lewis is like... epic.
But even though it's like, and maybe it, you know, he looks the part.
He makes it look real. Yeah.
You have to feel it. And right. And Daniel Day is evocative. He really does make you feel like you know who Lincoln is.
He's remarkable.
I think you'll leave the film thinking like, I'm not really sure this Napoleon guy. And you might walk away going, why he was such a chump? Like, why was he like? It's not a very And that's not the, I don't mind like an unflattering portrayal, but it's not fair, right? Yeah. To do an unflattering portrayal and then to give us nothing about.
It's not comprehensive enough to.
No, about his accomplishments. At least there were a lot of people surrounding him that could have given us some sort of insight. In the film, nothing. You get nothing from anybody else. It
sounds like the screenplay was not that great.
That would be my takeaway. And I think in terms of trying to capture, you know, a character, I mean, we've kind of alluded here to some of the, you know, the great biographies.
Kind of disappointing because you have Ridley Scott and you have, you know, Joaquin Phoenix and you're expecting this.
Yeah, but I see. I would say that Ridley's never really been good at. I don't think he's ever really been good.
He's not a Chris Nolan dude.
No, he's not, because
Chris Nolan's a philosopher. The way he, you know,
Blade Runner was revolutionary. The content was revolutionary. So again, I think Ridley Scott got lucky with that. The reason the movie flew is because visually nobody had seen the future quite like that.
Brilliant.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was really able to get
you transported to a different world.
Really did.
Yeah.
Alien.
Oh.
So why?
I mean,
you know, but. So the interesting thing about Ridley Scott is he's kind of does this thing. Like, for example, Gladiator, right? He's doing his take on probably the quintessential film.
Swords and Sandals, right? Swords and Sandals.
Yes, yeah. Or specifically Spartacus, right? I mean, Gladiator is Spartacus,
exactly,
too.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a spinoff of Spartacus in a way. But he's going to give you his version of it. And he did just a spectacular job.
You know, in the beginning when he's looking at the bird, right before they engage the Germans,
mm-hmm.
and he's there and he's picking up the dirt and he's inspecting the troops and he looks off to the side and there's a little tiny bird at a branch and then it flies away and then he just kind of looks up.
Yeah,
you know, those little touches. That's all Ridley Scott. That's not in the script.
It works there. Somehow it worked there. I'm gonna give this a second viewing and I'll let you know. But I have a feeling that. Again, the fact that there's no discussion in the film, there's a lot of battles in this, and there's a lot of battles. Okay, it's not like there's not battles.
I think I'm identifying, even though I haven't seen the movie. Yeah. I have seen the previews.
Yeah,
and I'll be honest with you, I was not impressed by the previews because just the few gestures that I saw from Joaquin Phoenix, and I didn't say this in the beginning, and I didn't say it to you before, but my impression was. He doesn't fit the role. He did not pull it off because he seemed way too, like you said, flat and almost disengaged from the character.
Napoleon was probably a pretty energetic young man. He probably was full of charm and vigor and intelligence and appeal.
And intensity, right?
And he was, you know, obviously he rose because of his military superiority.
Yeah.
And at the time, people were like, okay, well, we kind of need you to help us out. You know, there's a lot of situations and that was an opportunity. And really, his maneuvering with that was fantastic, how he maneuvered that. They kind of show it in the film, but they're lazy with it. I feel like, I don't know.
It's too bad because Joaquin Phoenix is such a phenomenal actor.
He really is. But I think he might have screwed the movie up. From what I've read, that he, as soon as he got involved, he started saying, you know, things like, oh, we need to rewrite this, and how would Napoleon say this? I think he would say it like this, and there was a lot of rewrites that were going on.
You know, actors should have limits to, like, there's, you know.
Well, no. You know. Well, it's interesting, in Killers of the Flower Moon, Leo actually did a lot of that as well, and you wonder how that impacted the film. I mean, it still ended up being a pretty good movie, but nonetheless, you wonder when an actor gets too involved.
You know, Quentin Tarantino, I've heard in a lot of interviews, he has a vision of how this character...
Oh, yeah, you got to do it.
And if you don't do it his way, he's going to shut you down.
Yeah.
You can't even say one word off that's in the script. It has to be said exactly word for word as written.
Yeah, he wants you to say it the way he wrote it.
And to convey it in a certain way. You know, if you're not doing it that way, he'll just shut you down. You know, so there's some directors that they're not looking for a performance that, you know, this, you know, the actor's angst, you know, they have ideas. No. You're going to do it this way. It's dictatorial. Yeah. But look at Tarantino's films, man.
I mean, and I think maybe Ridley Scott, maybe a little bit more. Apparently, he has clashed with a lot of his actors. He clashed with Harrison Ford and Blade Runner.
This backstory.
But you know, on the other hand, Sigourney Weaver loved him, I think, and, you know, for what he did for Alien, right? Like,
Russell Crowe, they got along really good.
They wanted to put like Sigourney Weaver in some sort of sexy space outfit, and he was like, no.
Yeah.
You know, that's not
all these Hollywood producers. They're always wanting, they weren't trying to make more money using, right. you know, yeah. sexual, you know, visuals, but
exploitation.
So, shall we wrap it up? Unless you have more insights that you would like to share with me.
No, I mean, I think, you know, just how do you capture a person's life? You know, how, what is the,
I have an idea for you. You said something earlier that's very important. You said his writings. I remember in high school reading a phenomenal book. I think I still have it somewhere in my boxes. It was simply The Letters of Benjamin Franklin. And I have to tell you, I read a lot of books in school when mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of, you know, different books for fun and stuff. One of the books that I will never forget, besides Alexander Dumas, you know, what's the book?
Three Musketeers?
No, the I'm totally blanking on the title of the book. Alexander Dumas, who wrote...
Not The Count of Monte Cristo.
Thank you. I can't believe I blanked on that. The Count of Monte Cristo absolutely shook my world. But the other book was The Letters of Benjamin Franklin. And literally, mm-hmm. all it was just letters. There was no narration, nothing. And you'd go from page to page, chapter to chapter. It was utterly riveting and moving. He would have debates with his son. His son was a rebel, and he's going again. And he's talking about, like, you know, the British and tyranny and all this mm-hmm. stuff. There'd be other, and you learned, you got inside his skin, and you became Benjamin Franklin in reading those letters. Mm-hmm. So maybe as a thesis to, you know, these great insights that you have is, you know, Napoleon wrote letter after letter after letter. He received letters. So the writings, like, right? I have writings. You have your writings. It's your voice on paper. That is a portal into...
Into your mind, of course.
Yeah, into emotions, into mind. So maybe...
Well, I mean, we've said before, writing is a way to put your thoughts into somebody right. else's brain immediately. Now, you're reading Benjamin Franklin's writings. You're immediately getting his thoughts.
I'm literally vicariously become Benjamin Franklin because I'm inhabiting his mind. So maybe one, you know, one thing is if people have left any shred of writing, their voice, if it's recorded in an audio manner... audiovisual or written, that I think is the place to start. Because if you want to understand Napoleon's motivations, and you read his letters, you read his speeches, that should be, right? If you died 100 years from now and somebody wants to find out who you are, they're going to find the scraps of paper you left behind in boxes, right? Even you wrote a memo, a birthday card for somebody, they're going to try to intuit your character. But if you leave writings, articles, books, They're gonna be able to recreate your character.
Podcasts.
Exactly. Right? So I think maybe to end the episode, we might want to say that leave something behind for people to look at.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining us. My name's Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm on a quest. What about you?
On a quest together.
Questioning reality.
Indeed.
Join us. Like, subscribe, tell a friend.
Comment.
Thank you. Peace out.
The QR Laboratorius. We want to emphasize that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and they do not reflect the official policies or positions of our employers and places of employment or any of their affiliates. Additionally, our discussions on this podcast should not be considered professional advice or endorsements of any particular organizations, products, or individuals. We're here to share our thoughts and stimulate conversation, but we encourage you to do your own research and form your own opinions.